Thanks for checking in for this episode of the Lake Effect Podcast. Today we're going to meet Darcy Egan, a longtime Cleveland Plain Dealer outdoors reporter, now retired, though still a prolific writer and a great Lake Erie guy. Hey, Darcy, thanks for stopping by today.
Oh, it's always fun sitting and chatting, especially up in the probably the best place in Ohio to live. You live here, I live here. We're up on Marblehead Peninsula, but more importantly, we're on Lake Erie, which is just a magnificent resource for the state of Ohio and for the country.
So you live in Marblehead, but you worked for the paper in Cleveland for years. How did that work?
Well, you know, especially with what I do, because that you can do it anywhere. You can write anywhere in the days of computers and laptops and digital cameras and things like that. So we've got a place up on Marblehead, and that's my home office, and that's where I work out of. But the best part of being mobile, the best part of digitally being able to work like I do, I can go anywhere in the world and plug in. Basically, what you do is you go out, you fish, and you hunt, and you enjoy yourself. You paddle, you hike, you have all the great outdoors events. Then you come back and write about them, and they pay you every week. It's a wonderful occupation, and you meet the best people in the world, because outdoorsmen generally are fun people doing what they enjoy.
Northern Ohio. It's got a huge coast, about 316 miles. Is it a great place to be an outdoor writer and cover the outdoors?
Well, in 1978, when I came aboard as the outdoors editor, Western Lake Erie was known as a pretty darn good walleye lake. Central Lake Erie, not so much. Smallmouth bass, that was pretty darn good as well. Yellow perch, spring and fall, that was good fishing as well. But it wasn't great. It was okay. And it gave me an awful lot to write about, especially the characters that were on the water back then and the few charter captains. There were only about 30 or 40 charter captains when I started covering Western Lake Erie.
It's certainly not like that now. There are close to 1,000 charter captains on Lake Erie.
No doubt about it.
What's changed?
What's changed is the differences in fishing, number one. Back in the 70s, it was a drift and cast fishery. That means that if you are a charter captain, you're going to allow your boat to drift over structure that holds walleye or yellow perch or smallmouth bass. So you're going to drift. You're going to cast a lure, count it down foot by foot until where your sonar unit is showing schools of fish, and then you start a retrieve. And the Erie Deary was the famous lure back then.
Oh, yes. There's a big Erie Deary statue in downtown Port Clinton.
Captain Dan Gale Bincy, who is a crusty old character, he developed that lure.
So in the old days, back when you got started, somebody fishing on Lake Erie in general held a rod in their hand.
Yes, they were casting, retrieving, feeling the bite, setting the hook, and that was the real draw for me, because that was actual fishing. That was like smallmouth bass fishing. You can't, in bass tournaments, you're not allowed to troll, but charter captains on Lake Erie discovered that trolling was a much more efficient way to get a limit of fish for the six people on their boat that day. Trolling is when you're going to put the lures out a certain distance away from the boat, and you're going to motor along at a very slow speed, one knot to maybe two or three knots, and those lures that are trailing behind the boat are going to cover a lot of water, and you can control the depth that they'll run.
That sounds kind of scientific.
Now, to make it really work, is that you've got, when we had the zebra mussel come into Lake Erie, water cleared up. They're filter feeders, and that dingy water that we used to fish out Western Lake Erie cleared up substantially. Now that gave the walleye an advantage in avoiding fishermen, because their vision is exceptional, especially at night. They're night feeders.
Right.
So you've got these fish that could actually see the boats around them, and they would avoid them. So now what you had developing was salmon tackle called planer boards, which took the lines away from the boat.
Planer boards, is that what I see out on the lake? They're usually on either side of the boat, and they've got a flag on them?
Bingo. And because they've got flags on them, the captain can see them, and he can see what the lines are doing.
Have the demographics changed of who is out on the lake fishing now? Back when you got started, was it mostly guys?
Well, you know, my wife, back in the late 70s, early 80s, was a fishing guide. Her mom and dad, Bob and Jenny Brown, owned Channel Grove Marina, and she got herself a 26-foot wooden boat, and boom, out on Lake Erie. And she worked her way through college as a Lake Erie fishing guide.
Is she a better angler than you?
Well, of course. Our wives are always better anglers than we are. But she is an excellent angler. But we had Claudie Blaha and a few other of the female charter captains. And mostly they were involved with a marina, like my wife with Channel Grove Marina. And Blaha Blaha began at Channel Grove Marina.
Okay.
And today there are probably a dozen female charter captains among the 900 to 1,000 charter captains we have on the lake. And women are generally better fishermen than men because they are more sensitive and they are more willing to learn new and different techniques. They're not going to rely on something their grandfather taught them 25 years ago. They're going to rely on what they read and what is happening now.
You're sounding kind of sexist here.
Oh, I got to be, because I've got 4 daughters, and they're all good fishermen, and I've got 1 daughter who can throw more fly line on the West Coast than I can. She lives in Portland, but travels to Alaska regularly to fish salmon and trout.
Does somebody have to have a boat to fish on Lake Erie? Outside of getting on a charter boat, I mean, are there places around where people can just show up and bank fish?
James, this is a great story, because about 25 years ago, I was hearing rumors that you could cast for walleye at night late in the year. We're talking about November, December, if there was open water. And so the focal point of all this night fishing for walleye was the Huron Pier. And all the Huron boys down there were keeping it quiet. And I was going from Cleveland out to go duck hunting Sandusky Bay one weekend, and I thought, well, you know, I'll take the necessary spinning rod, and I'll take a couple of lures typically that would work in that scenario. And I took some Cordell spots with me. And so I went up, and there were about 5 or 6 guys on the pier. So anyway, I've got about a 3 or 4 pound walleye on the line, and I'm thinking, this is really cool. And so I called the guy who's about 10 or 15 feet away, and I said, if you net this fish, you can have it. And he was all excited, so he runs down, he nets my fish, and I had my camera with me. So I said, hold that fish up, let me take a picture of it. So I did, boom. And so I ended up catching 3 or 4 really nice walleye. And I could tell when the bite was going to start, because the guys down by the lighthouse would catch a fish or two, and you could actually physically see a school of walleye coming into the river.
That shallow.
And they were feeding on shad, gizzard shad, which is the wintertime fattener for walleye. Walleye feed heavily on gizzard shad, and most people don't know they exist in Lake Erie. So anyway, this was great. So that week, I write a column about catching walleye after dark, casting from shore in Huron, Ohio, on the pier. I was vilified. I had local fishermen from Huron.
Because you left the cat out of the bag?
I left the cat out of the bag. And they complained to the publisher of the Plain Dealer, the general manager.
And Darcy.
It was terrible. And I mean, I don't know how they did it, but they found my private phone number. and started calling me, one right after the other. I had to shut the phone down. It was terrible. And to this day, a lot of them blame me for ruining their great fishery, because by the next year, there was a guy with a hot dog cart going up and down the pier. But that is the success of what I did as an outdoor writer. I brought things to people, that things they didn't know.
Darcy, over the course of your time on Lake Erie, what would you say is the worst thing that's happened to Lake Erie? Is there one particular event or one particular topic that you consider the most detrimental to Lake Erie?
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
What is that?
I grew up, we moved from Calgary, Alberta in Western Canada when I was about 9 years old. And I was the only fisherman in the family. My father never caught a fish in his life. But I had this drive to go fishing, and I wanted to, and I eventually did learn to shoot shotguns and rifles and hunt and all those other outdoor sports, because those to me were really, really attractive. But I grew up on the Cuyahoga River, and I can tell you how desperately bad the Cuyahoga River was. It was a cesspool. Now, saying that, what was happening on the Maumee River watershed was that we were seeing cattle farms, we were seeing livestock farms, we were seeing turkey and pig and cattle and all these farms, egg farms and things like this. And what, as they grew, the phosphorus that was going into the Maumee River watershed,
yeah,
began to propagate algae. That phosphorus builds algae. And over the years, the state of Ohio, the Ohio Farm Bureau, certainly did not have the restrictions needed to stop the massive flow of phosphorus into Lake Erie. And it's still happening today. And even it gets larger each and every year because there are more cattle farms. The Farm Bureau will not restrict cattle farms. So what do we have on Western Lake Erie? We have an algal bloom that is huge. We need to restrict cattle farms. There's no doubt in my mind at all. They were blaming it on sewage treatment plants. And yeah, they were a part of the problem, but a very small part of the problem. Cattle farms, cattle farms, cattle farms.
Thank you so much for stopping by today, Darcy. It's good to see you again.
It's always good to join you, James.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me today for this episode of the Lake Effect Podcast. I'm your host and producer, James Proffitt. Executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. If you have questions or want to learn more about Lake Effect, visit wgte.org/lakeeffect. Until then, I'll see you somewhere around the lake.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.